arrive, I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio, and we're going to dedicate an hour of time tonight to talk about Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie's divorce, because I know that's what you guys want to hear about tonight. No, I'm just playing. Just playing. Don't hang up on us. Anyway, welcome back. We're going to talk about a bunch of hard-hitting news tonight, and the Brad Pitt Angelina Jolie thing. If you want to hear about that, go turn on CNN because they're the ones covering that. It's like their top story for the last couple days. I actually wrote a story about that today. But anyway, I'm really happy to be back with you, and I'm glad for everybody that's tuning back in tonight. All of our new listeners, welcome to the show. We are going to be taking some calls. We're going to have a really wide variety of things we're going to talk about tonight because there's just so much stuff going on. There's no like one single big huge story that we're going to talk about, but there's plenty of like random crazy things going on around the world here in the United States. We're going to break all those things down. If you want to call in, the call-in number is 718-717-8296. If you do call in, make sure your microphone is muted. That way we don't have any feedback and the audio sounds good. So good. Everything's good so far. And, we got a cool panel that's going to be joining us tonight as well. And let's get started. Joining us first, my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, man?
Hey, just watching this stuff going down in Charlotte earlier. And I don't know, man. You always wonder what event's going to bring it to a boil and maybe things are starting. Who knows?
Yeah, how many people are gonna have to get gunned down by the cops, before something is done, and people stop bickering and arguing about whether or not we have a problem here. I mean, God.
Well, what about the story about crates of automatics being left in Chicago for gangs and how they're initiating essentially a huge war, an internal war, dude? I mean, I guess they couldn't get what they wanted out of Russia and China, so now they're going to turn on us.
Very interesting story. We didn't actually cover it on the Anti-Media, but it was covered by some of our friends. I think the Free Thought Project covered it. A former gang member was speaking out from Chicago saying that they used to find crates of just really high-end guns, automatic, assault rifles and handguns and stuff that you don't just get off the shelf. Really, really hard to find.
Don't forget 5,000 and 6,000 rounds per crate. I mean, enough to launch your own war.
Yeah, there's definitely that aspect that's fueling this brutal street war over in Chicago. Now they're calling the place Chirac because it's so bad out there. So many people get gunned down, hundreds and hundreds of people gunned down in gang-related violence. And then, of course, the drug war also plays a factor and mass incarceration. Also, don't forget about Homan Square, which was also in Chicago, which was like one of these CIA-style black sites. It was operated by the Chicago Police Department, but it was like a place where they would just like disappear people into this place, interrogate them, and, you know, torture them. One guy was put in there for after getting caught with like a fair amount of weed, you know, and you know, you just disappear, no lawyer, you know, they torture you, they.
And you know what's prevalent, Nick? It's like the guy that the story that just came out about, he didn't get a drink of water for 6 days. I mean, they were letting people in there a whole weekend, no food, no water, no heat, no electricity. I mean, and then just say, whoops, we forgot about you.
Yeah, dude. I mean, just horrible what they're doing to people. We're also joined tonight by one of our awesome journalists, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Hey, what's up, guys? Have they said yet whether a gun was actually found in Terrence's car?
There's reports. I've been following it, and there's been reports by the by Terrence's own daughter, who's eyewitness and recorded about an hour and 11 minutes right after the shooting. She said, you know, I have it on film that police were going back and forth from their cars to where my father's body was, opening the car, going in and out. I mean, did not a story just come out about how they were caught on tape planting a gun?
Yeah.
How they were caught on tape planting drugs? They planted PCP. I mean, PCP hasn't been a street drug in years. I mean, it's lost its thing since Crocodile came out, and it cost 1/100th of what PCP is. So,
and the ACLU is spearheading a lawsuit out of I think in Connecticut, where the cops were caught on tape trying to frame an activist. And this guy was like one of those he was like an open carry activist, and you know, he would go out to the police checkpoints and you know, hold signs warning people that there was a police checkpoint ahead. And the cops came up to him, and you know, they slapped his camera out of his hand for no reason. They took his gun and ran his they took his gun back to their car, running his gun permit. And this whole time they thought his camera wasn't rolling, but it actually was. And they're sitting there, three cops going back and forth for like, I think they said it was like 20 minutes, talking about how they're going to trump up the charges against this guy, how they're going to, you know, make it look like what they're doing is legit. I mean, totally yeah. Ridiculous.
I read that whole article last night, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's egregious, man, egregious. So who knows what these guys are capable of planting on anyone they shoot. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, half of the people that cops shoot get stuff planted on them, so it makes it look like it was justified.
You know what I've found? One of Sean King, you know, the journalist for the Post, one of his articles said, you know, in a lot of other countries in the world, we don't trust people to gun down and have lethal firearms without a college degree. I think at the very least, that has to be the minimum.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the case.
It's also just like, why can they not use a taser? I mean, they did use a taser in this case. They use a taser and a gun almost simultaneously, so it kind of defeats the purpose of the taser if you're also going to shoot someone. But it's like, there's got to be a way to immobilize someone without killing them, and especially in the case where you're making a judgment call where you don't know, like, you don't know what the person is doing, and the evidence right now is pointing to he wasn't moving. But he was moving towards the cars. That probably freaked the cop out a little bit. But, you know, it's just ridiculous for people to be dying over these, like, minute movements.
Exactly, man, exactly. You know, and there's also another shooting that went on yesterday over in North Carolina. And now this one's a little more murky because there's we haven't seen any video yet or anything. But also joining us tonight to talk about that and some other things is the amazing journalist and editor Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's up?
Oh, hanging in there. I was just watching some live video about the ongoing protests in Charlotte, North Carolina. I know you wrote an article about this. Tell us a little bit about what's going on down there in North Carolina.
So Keith Lamont Scott was waiting in his car in the same place that he always waited in his car, reading a book like he always did, waiting for his son to get dropped off from the school bus. And police were serving an arrest warrant for somebody else who lives in the complex. And they saw him in the car, and there's tons of debate about what happened next. But the witnesses on scene, including, I guess, either his daughter saw it or she had friends who saw it, because there were plenty of eyewitnesses, he apparently got out of the car with his book in his hand and then went and got back in his car with the book, got back out of his car with the book again, and police shot him. And according to witnesses on scene, like a number of eyewitnesses, they said it was very clearly a book. It was not a gun. But what happened were, when he got out, the police said, gun, gun, and just shot him. Now, there's a number of issues with this. First of all, you know, his family members all claim that he didn't have a gun there. But even if he did have a gun, and even if he got out of his car with the gun, North Carolina is an open carry state. So they would have no reason to shoot him just for having a gun. I mean, they shouldn't anyway, unless they're having a gun, like, actually being pointed at them. And if you'll notice, even in police dialogue, they never have said, he pointed the gun at us. So they never even got, like, that part of the story right. And then she did say, like TD was saying, she did say on camera in the first, like, live stream recording right after it happened, she said she was watching the cops go back and forth from their patrol cars to her father's car over and over again. And she even said on tape at that time, they are going to plant evidence. They are going to make it look like he has a gun. It was just a book. So, I mean, it was very clearly laid out in the minutes after it happened. And the eyewitnesses that were all interviewed by her and everybody else on the scene all said that it was a book. So this police narrative is fishy, to say the least. And it's not the only one. The most recent police killings, like these three really controversial police killings, they all have a number of questions about them that actually make the police look really bad. So...
I'm sure the NRA is trying to defend this guy, right? Because North Carolina is an open carry state and they stand for gun rights, or is the NRA, once again, like they were with the Philando Castile case, quiet on this? I mean, where are the gun rights?
I don't know if what they're saying about that. I mean, it seems like whoever gets killed by the cops, all the people that would normally be for gun rights and all of that just automatically jump all over the victim. So I would assume that's still happening, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking over here at the NRA's Facebook page, and I don't see anything about this gentleman that was gunned down in North Carolina for supposedly, at least according to the cops, having a gun when North Carolina, as you mentioned, is a open carry state. So, you know, once again, I mean, this is the same thing that happened with the Philando Castile case, and for those that can't recall what went on there, it was like this guy got pulled over for like the 30th time, all of which were like minor traffic infractions and things like that. Cop asked him for his ID. He let the cop know that he had a gun, and then he was reaching for his ID, and the cops just gunned the guy down.
That guy's back on the street, Nick, back in Falcon Heights, back up in the same community, back among people who, if he ever gets caught in a bad position, don't be surprised if he disappears, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, once again, it's just, you know, these protests are now coming to a head again in North Carolina. I mean, how many times is it going to have to take? And, you know, there were borderline riots last night. I know a Walmart got broken into. People said it was looted. It didn't look like to me like it was really looted. It looked like a few people ran in, maybe stole a few things and ran out, but...
Someone was killed tonight in protest. The protests were really violent, and there was like contention among the crowd, and it wasn't a police shooting, but somebody was killed tonight.
I saw that, and you know, that's it sucks. It was probably, you know, what was it, like people within the protest fighting each other?
Yeah, something. It hasn't come out yet, like what the fight was about, but yeah, that was what it was.
You couldn't pick a better state for this to happen. You have some deep rooted, and it's not even. It's not even hidden, man. It's out in the open, racism in any small town in North Carolina. And especially, remember, they just passed anti-LGBT that got them basically lost them billions of dollars in revenue because people are pulling events out of it now, man. Perfect state to have this happen if you wanted something major to happen.
Jake, what were you saying?
Well, I was just saying, yeah, the All-Star game pulled out of North Carolina.
Yeah, that's right. The NBA pulled out. I mean, and it wasn't just them. It's been all kinds of events. So if you want to see a Tinder keg, there you go.
Oh, man. Not a good situation. But, you know, just this police violence is continuing. It's probably going to keep happening. You know, and it goes back to the question, what's it going to take for legitimate reforms to finally take place. I mean, Claire, what do you think?
Honestly, I'm not sure at this point that reforming the police is even worthwhile because it's an obvious epidemic. People are obviously outraged. There have been so many police killings that are unjustified that, you know, the police are hardly punished and usually you're just given a paid vacation. At this point, I am a very strong for the abolishment of police. And I, you know, people freak out. They're like, are you crazy? No, there are actual solutions in place in places that, like small towns and such and communities who have basically either fired their police force because of budgetary reasons or for otherwise, and they have used community programs that advocate like mental health and community-oriented solutions where when there's a dispute, you have kind of moderators that go back and forth. And these solutions are actually working really well, and people aren't getting gunned down by cops anymore. So I really feel like that's an honest, like, decent solution. There was a study that came out recently that said that body cams actually increase violence and deadly force by cops, and particularly against, like, African-Americans. So body cameras clearly aren't really an option because police know that even if it's captured on camera, like the research has found, even if it's captured on camera with them killing somebody, they're not going to be punished for it. So they almost feel like it's protection. So that doesn't work. Retraining police in a different manner other than, you know, the military boot camp style would be a really pertinent, wonderful way to actually reform policing. There are countless studies, even by police organizations, that show that more of a classroom-style, intellectual, kind of community-oriented understanding form of training would improve policing, like, exponentially. But yet, the part, like 95% of the departments in the country still use military boot camp style training. So clearly, that's not going to happen either because people have been saying retrain the cops forever and they're not doing it. I mean, there is one other possibility that hasn't really been studied that much is the idea that police should carry their own liability insurance so that taxpayers don't foot the bill when they kill people or brutalize them. That actually has potential to do some good, too. But like I said, all of these things are only, like, partial methods, and they aren't going to actually reform the problem because the base, when it comes down to it, the root problem is police culture. And it's, you know, it's racism-infused, and it's authoritarian, and it's about control, and it's an us-versus-them culture. And, you know, it's something that these pro-police apologists would never admit, but the culture is so insular that it's almost impenetrable by anything else.
So, you know, judging by, you know, looking back at, like, Ferguson and, you know, Mike Brown, the guy that got choked to death over in New York City for selling cigarettes, you know, it's been a couple years now, and we haven't really seen any... You know, like you said, they did the body cam thing, which to me was just kind of an appeasement. It was like a bandage over a gaping wound. And, you know, as you mentioned, it hasn't really worked. You know, recently we've seen a kind of violence starting to turn against the cops, especially what went on in Dallas. Do you think events, if these kind of events continue to happen where people are gunned down under kind of suspicious circumstances, do you think that there's just going to be more and more blowback in the form of violence against police?
Yeah, there absolutely will be, and I think that they're planning for that to happen. It's like they see it coming, because two things have happened. In Louisiana, the first state to do this, they passed a Blue Lives Matter law, and this is insane to me that this actually was passed, but under Blue Lives Matter legislation, and you have to keep in mind Congress has this on their desk right now, modeled after the Louisiana law. Anybody who uses violence or who uses who kills a police officer can be tried. It can be tried as a hate crime. And although people like warned ahead of time that this was going to be a really really bad idea, they've already started doing it. There's a man. I think the charges have since been dropped, at least under the legislation. But he was charged basically for offending the cops. Like, he criticized cops and yelled at them and called them names, and they charged him with a hate crime.
He made them cry.
Yeah, basically. And that puts the occupation, you know, the chosen occupation of police officer in line with traditionally persecuted classes of people, like, you know, for race or gender or religion, it's absolutely absurd. You know, people choose to be police officers. They don't, nobody makes them do this. They're not conscripted into the force. So to put, you know, hurting a police officer who already, you know, we've seen countless times where officers trump up charges. Oh, he assaulted me, when, like, you know, you poke them with your finger or something. I mean, this is really dangerous. So to me, this looks as if they're preparing for extreme blowback. Because if Congress passes that legislation, I mean, I can't even imagine what's going to happen at that point. It's going to absolutely explode the epidemic of violence on both sides, in my opinion.
And, you know, the militarization of police, although, you know, there was a big fuss made about it after Ferguson, because everyone remembers how they were using all kinds of heavy equipment, you know, MRAPs and, you know, that kind of thing, armored vehicles, assault weapons and stuff, to intimidate the protesters. You know, there was a big call for the demilitarization of police, and I think, in fact, Obama even passed something to kind of start demilitarizing. But all of that got reversed after Dallas. In fact, I saw that Obama made a statement basically saying that, you know, maybe we need to remilitarize the police so that they can be ready to deal with this kind of violence that can be expected when you have this out of control, you know, police state going around. People are going to get fed up with it, and they're going to start shooting back eventually. You know, and so you're right. I mean, it does kind of seem like they're preparing for the blowback, because it's going to come, and it's not going to be pretty.
Instead of fixing the problem in any sort of way, even like palliative fixes, instead of even like the small band-aids of, say, you know, body cams and stuff, they're just preparing for the blowback because they know they're so, like, far gone that there's no helping them. That's what it looks like to me.
And remember that this is what they want, because this is going to help them fix the problem of freedom.
Yeah, we can't be having people thinking too much. And, you know, it is kind of ironic that this guy got gunned down supposedly while holding a book. Of course, that's, you know, something that is yet to be confirmed. But I mean, it is kind of ironic that they gunned a guy down carrying a book. I saw there's this great meme where it's kind of shows somebody throwing a book at the cops, and how knowledge is power, and it truly is. You know, a book is stronger than any gun, but you know, it's not good. And the problem is that this is going to create a downward cycle where, you know, the cops continue to be brutal against the public. The public reacts and starts shooting back at the cops. In turn, the cops get more aggressive, and so on and so on and so on, to the point where, you know, all the cops you're going to see on the street are going to be militarized, rolling around in, you know, SWAT equipment and armored cars, just patrolling your streets as if it's a regular patrol.
Remember what we said, where at some point it would pass the point of no return, where every single soldier from every major war has always said that the reason war ever starts is because so many of the people you care about and love die that you don't care about dying anymore, and all you want to do is kill the people that killed them. And when it gets to that point in society, the fabric tears apart, and we have, in all reality, a civil war where if you're not on either side, it's not going to matter. Bullets are going to fly anyway. You're going to have to choose something at some point.
And
you know what? This just occurred to me, too, because really, if you examine the logistics of people always freak out, like, you know, people, they term conspiracy theorists, say martial law is coming, martial law is coming. But if you look at the logistics and, you know, how martial law could be implemented, it's next to impossible in this nation for geography's sake alone, not to mention anything else. But if they are going to increase the militarization of police even more, and they're going to give them this protectionism in the form of legislation, and they're still going to kill people and provoke them to exactly how CB said, where people no longer care if they die, it's, in effect, martial law. Like, that's one way where it actually could come, without having the legislation or, you know, the executive order or anything else. That would be effective martial law.
Yeah, and, you know, we got this very real possibility of an incoming administration under Trump, who has been who was just endorsed by the country's biggest police union, and you know is shown very authoritarian tendencies, and you know there's no telling if these things keep escalating, which it seems like they're going to. What's going to happen under the next administration? Because you know Obama is, you know, he has a lot of things, but he's not the very social authoritarian that Trump looks like he could become. Now, I'm not saying Obama's not authoritarian at all, but Trump makes him look good, you know. And in fact, Hillary and Trump both make Obama look good, and that's a scary prospect because we all know, and throughout this entire show that we've been doing for a couple years now, we've been criticizing Obama on a weekly basis. For me to be able to sit here and say, you know what, these two candidates make Obama look good, that scares the living shit out of me. It's scary. I mean,
it is. Obama is more. I mean, Obama really is an authoritarian, but Trump is a totalitarian, and if not a fascist, and so is Hillary. I mean, they have really frightening. I mean, consider that Hillary Clinton was just endorsed by the Bushes. I mean, that should say it all right there, because people say, "Oh, Trump's going to be so terrible." Well, Trump was endorsed by the police union. That's not good at all. It's not good at all that the Bushes are endorsing Hillary either. I mean, this is just these two candidates, neither one of them, it does not bode well.
Yeah, and Grandpa.
Yeah, George said Hillary's almost as hot as Barbara.
You got Grandpa Nazi Bush over here going to vote for Clinton. I mean, yeah, that's crazy. Crazy stuff. Doesn't look good, but you know what? The thing is that things are unfortunately going to have to get a lot worse here for people to start snapping out of it, because as we've witnessed over the past month, the biggest issue, at least according to Americans right now, is Colin Kaepernick not standing up for the goddamn national anthem. That's the single biggest issue in the United States, according to the average American. So I'll tell you what. We're not even close to being where we need to be to, you know, when it comes to the conscious evolution that we need for people to be in when we're ready to actually start making some legit reforms to the way this government is run. I mean, we've got a long way to go, and unfortunately, it's going to have to get a lot worse for people to start really snapping out of it. I mean, I think people are halfway there. You know, we got Trump and Clinton, the two most unpopular candidates ever. I just saw a Pew Research survey this morning that showed that the main driving reason, and this is hilarious when I was reading the survey, the main reason people are voting for Trump is literally because he's not Hillary, and that's how it was worded. And the biggest reason people are voting for Clinton is because she's not Trump. And not only that, but the voting participation is like historically low.
Are both valid reasons, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the thing that you don't hear about very often is that you could vote against Trump and Hillary by voting for someone in a third party. You know, even though Bernie Sanders...
Not Mr. TPP, though. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
I think people are halfway there. You know, and they're very unsatisfied with the Congress. I think people are pretty fed up with the oligarchy. They know the government is unresponsive. They're unrepresentative. You know, but they're not to the point yet where they're willing to question the institutions and really take a real good look at them. Just like we see with these police shootings. You know, half the people in the country, when a cop guns down a guy, they make excuses for the cop. You know, no matter how egregious. It is. I mean, even with Eric Garner in New York, who was selling cigarettes. I mean, people are like, well, he shouldn't have been selling cigarettes. It's like, wait, so a guy was selling loose cigarettes on the side, so that's okay for a cop to choke the guy to death? You know, and so people aren't really ready to question these institutions because they haven't been affected by them yet. But that's going to happen soon because we're in a position where the economy is stagnating, the police have become militarized. The foreign policy objectives that we've been pursuing since World War II are kind of collapsing. The whole world is reshaping, and it's not looking that friendly for the American economy and the American standard of living, it's not going to get better. First, it's going to get worse. And as that starts to happen, I think people are going to start more and more questioning these institutions like police and like the bureaucracy, the government, the executive branch, and even the Supreme Court, which is completely corrupted at this point as well. So, you know, it's going to, over the next couple years, maybe decade and a half, you know, and something else we talk about all the time as the jobs get taken up by the robots and stuff, you know, this country's not in good shape. And so people are going to have to really take a look at the status quo, and the status quo is going to have to be demolished, and the entire way of life is going to have to be rebuilt, you know. And the only thing I can hope for is that when we rebuild, it's built under new principles that make more sense, because right now we've been continuing this experiment with Republican democracy. You know, it's a 2,500-year-old experiment, and it almost always winds up in a dictatorship, you know. And look at us right now. We're getting ready to elect Trump, who by all measures is looks like a dictator. I mean,
the only reason it hasn't collapsed yet, Nick, is because of the Second Amendment, and that's it. And if they get the people dumbed down enough to just give it up, then it's just going to be over, man. It's going to be the greatest thing you've ever seen, the biggest massacre they'll ever be able to pull off. They'll just get rid of every undesirable there is, and there's tons of them.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't want that to happen. We don't want to see this empire go into overdrive mode and go into hyper-nationalist mode. But you know what? That's something that could happen under Trump. And under Clinton, you know, we're just looking at just continuing this major, major offensive against Russia overseas, which could drag us into a major war situation. So either one of these candidates is just a bad combination when it comes to our freedom. But as I said, you know,
Actually, the Colin Kaepernick thing is a really good example of that hyper-patriotism, hyper-nationalism. Like, we're seeing it in advance.
Yeah, it's playing out right before our eyes.
Yeah. And it's just a preview. You're right. Like, if Trump comes in, that's going to be, like, I can't even imagine.
For, like, a pop culture sports thing, though, I mean, it's obviously it's a sad example of what it takes to get people to focus on it, but at least it is making people question, you know, their allegiance to the flag. I mean, it does have that going for it.
It is, you know, and that is a good thing. It is polarizing, but, you know, there is a lot of people in it. And the cool thing that I like is that the Colin Kaepernick protest has really gone viral, and now people are doing it, you know, all over the place. Other teams, high schoolers, you know, school kids not standing for the Pledge of Allegiance and stuff like that. I mean, these are great developments, because we need to break this cycle of conditioning, because that's what it is. You know, the Pledge of Allegiance every day in school, the national anthem every single public event. I mean, this is brainwashing 101, conditioning, you know, getting you to unquestionably love your government no matter what it does in your name, you know. And so this is it is a productive protest, and it is getting a conversation started, but unfortunately in some aspects it's just further entrenching some of these hyper-nationalists that are just like putting their heads in the sand.
Dude, it's doing something crazy up here too, which is bringing all the racists out of the woodworks, getting them fired, getting them shamed on social media. There's an endless supply of just dipshit racists up here. It's actually just comedy watching social media.
It is. It has been pretty comical recently with all this stuff going on, man. I mean,
they get fired for saying racist stuff on social media.
Yeah, there was a guy up here. He put Muslims get out or something, and he got a big boom in business initially, and now there's so much backlash against him. The guy's like, I'm going to actually take off for the winter. And the place has been around for like 50 years or something. So it's done.
Well, that's what we need, is the social pressure, you know, to deal with all these issues of racism and...
Well, these people have no... They don't have... There's no place in our future. We're not going back to a white Christian America. It's not going to happen ever again. There's no way demographically. So if you cannot stomach the America that it's becoming, then go back to Europe or wherever where it's homogenous.
Yeah, turn it around on them, right? Yeah, that's the thing. Demographically speaking, you know, religion is at the lowest popularity point that it's ever been. I mean, there's fewer Christians in the United States, as far from like from a percentage standpoint, than there's ever been. There's fewer white people in the United States from a percentage point. You know, and so the U.S. isn't what it's going to be. You know, we're not going to make America great again and go back to the 1950s. I mean, that's just not going to happen. And that's what I think a lot of these people are so scared of. They're so afraid of losing this, you know, what's been the status quo for a long time, where everyone, you know, 90 something percent of white Americans can have a good job and be middle class and not be insecure with their paychecks and don't have to worry about living paycheck to paycheck.
But
way of life is disappearing, man, and it is sad.
What people don't understand, because they're not privy to any real history, is that that came at the expense of the whole world from World War II. That was just the spillover. And it only lasted like 3 decades, and then it was over. And then Japan took over, because all the infrastructure that we rebuilt for them after we bombed them, because in all honesty, we didn't win, dude, if we rebuilt them. So whatever happened as a result of World War II, it gave us a false sense of economic security. That's been dead, man. It's been dead for a while. It had a hiccup with Clinton under a tech boom. It was a little bubble, and now it's really showing its ugly face. All we have to export is poverty and war, and that is it.
Yeah, the spoils of war post-World War II, man. You know, the U.S. enjoyed its hegemony. And then, you know, as you were mentioning under Clinton, you know, following the collapse of the USSR, you know, we went through another economic boom, and then, you know, then there was the housing bubble. Now, looking at this issue of racism and stuff, I mean, and why Trump is so damn popular is that, you know, there is this, like I said, there is this white status quo, the white middle class, the white working class, who for the last several generations have been living pretty comfortably, middle class, only, you know, one income per family was enough to own a house, own a car, you know, and you didn't have to, you know, you could put the kids through college and all that stuff and not have to worry about it. Now, everybody our age, you know, and the people that are millennials, people that are like under 50, under 40, you know, they're dealing with a whole new world. It's no longer like, you know, yeah, everybody's going to have a job and it's all going to be, you know, no big deal. And the reason why Trump's getting so popular is that people, because they don't know the underlying reasons why this is happening, people are turning and saying, you know what, it's the Muslims' fault. You know, it's the refugees coming in. You know, they're the ones making us insecure. Or they're like, well, the reason I don't have a good job anymore is because of these Mexicans that are coming here. And so everybody's looking for something to blame it on, because in one way, they're right. I mean, life just isn't what it used to be. We're no longer that, you know, no longer everybody's going to be middle class and everybody just has to have one job and, you know, your whole family's good to go.
But we could be, Nick. We could be. The only thing is that it's not going to be the way we think. What's going to instead happen is that if, and I'm sure, Jake, you could probably even go into this further, if energy becomes free and technology becomes open source, 3D print everything at home for free. Don't even go to Target or Walmart anymore. I mean, that could be the future, but we've got to demand that happen.
Yeah, and you know, and that's why Trump is so popular, because he's coming along and he's like, you know what? It's the Mexicans. We got to build a big wall, keep them out. They won't take our jobs. You know, keep the Muslims in over on the other side of the ocean. We don't got to worry about them coming back here and bombing us. And you know, people, because it makes sense, kind of from an emotional standpoint, because that is something that you could see. You could see that there's Mexicans all around the country. You could see that there's Muslims that have fled Iraq and the Middle East, you know, unfortunately, because a lot of it is because of our intervention and stuff over there. A lot of the reason why there's a bunch of people from Mexico trying to get into the United States was because of NAFTA and the trade agreement that destroyed the farming class down in Mexico. And so all those people are no longer have jobs. And so they're looking to come over here because, shit, coming over here is better than starving at home. You know, and so really all this stuff is, and the only reason why Trump is popular, is just scapegoating. It's scapegoating, and what it really is, and the worst part of it all, is that it's a big distraction, because you know what? These people that are supporting Trump, they're not even scratching the surface of the underlying issues that we're facing, and the reason why we're so broke, the reason why the economy is messed up, the reason why there's a refugee crisis. I mean, looking back at all this stuff, a lot of it stems from our empire. You know, we're over here.
And our love of Skittles, Nick.
Yeah, and the Skittles, man. Those damn Skittles, dude. And those refugee photographers that are taking pictures of Skittles. And
what is this Skittles shit? I'm sorry, I missed the meme on that one. What is the Skittles thing?
All right, let me go into it, because I actually wrote an article. You know, unfortunately, I had to do this. I wrote an article today on stupid Skittles shit. Donald Trump Jr., which is Trump's son and one of his advisors, tweeted out a photo that says, if I had a bowl of Skittles and I told you just three would kill you, would you take a handful? And then it says, that's our Syrian refugee problem. So basically what he's trying to say in this post is that, sure, there's a bunch of refugees that are just, you know, women, children, and men that are innocent that are just trying to get out of the war zone. But mixed in with these refugees could be ISIS terrorists, people that want to come over here and hurt us, which, you know, is probably actually pretty accurate on that standpoint. There probably are people that are mixed in with some of these refugees that are trying to hurt us. I mean, if somebody was blowing up my neighborhood and destroyed my home and killed my family members and I had to flee my home and go into their country, I might be a little upset too. But again, it goes back to the issue here of distractions. And Trump, with his anti-Muslim rhetoric, fails to identify why these refugee crises are happening, which has to do with our empire. And Trump is the candidate that says, I'm going to rebuild America's military, as if we don't already spend five times the amount of everybody else combined in the world.
We're going to lose 85 trillion, not 8.5.
Exactly. Make America spend a bunch of money on empire again. That should be Trump's real slogan.
That's $20,000 per person. So enjoy your taxes, people.
If they took that money and invested it in freaking domestic technology, I don't understand why they don't realize how quickly we could grow some kind of economy again and actually have exports again if we were focusing on things like nanotechnology. You know, it's the stuff that's going to be the future. Maybe that's what they're doing at DARPA and with the military. I mean, maybe they really are working that stuff. They're just finding wartime applications for it.
You can't concentrate wealth if everyone's doing well, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why these guys are doing these wars overseas to control oil and stuff, is because it's a real easy way to centralize all the wealth in the world and for them to maintain their hegemony and their power and, you know, keep themselves sealed in and keep funding the government and get their, you know, favors called in for, you know, from the Clinton Foundation or whether it's them or Trump or whatever. You know, that's what these guys do. They need to control the resources, control the people, and they don't want to invest in an open source technological revolution in the United States, because then everybody's, you know, the wealth gets decentralized and then no one could control the power of the people anymore. And
that's going to happen whether they want it or not.
It is, and it can't happen soon enough. But, you know, when that does happen, the people are going to actually be able to have accountability for once. And, you know, they've been so comfortable for so long with the status quo, with this highly centralized way of doing things and controlling the wealth and the political power, that they don't want it to change. And so they're reluctant against change. And so all these politicians are anti-progress. You know, Clinton walking around calling herself a progressive, it's a slap in the face for anybody interested in progress, because, I mean, it's just a bullshit, you know, total bullshit.
She is progressive if the year was 1930.
Oh, man. Oh, that was a good one. Claire, I want to give you a shot to chime in here because I know you got to get going. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I almost tune out to all politics because it feels to me like there are no solutions there at all. The state is never going to solve itself. There's nothing that we can do through legislation because the legislation has to serve the people who are going to enforce it and create it, et cetera, et cetera. I'm increasingly looking outside of all of this. So it's like all of it is just kind of mildly entertaining theater, and I don't know. I mean, Trump and Hillary might as well be the same person. One's going to be a fascist at home, the other's going to be a fascist abroad, and we're going to have wars that will continue either way, and we're going to have a police state that's going to get worse and worse, and the laws are going to get stricter and stricter, and nothing's really going to change.
We have to think of like some open source technology is definitely outside of that. That's something that could break that paradigm down.
Hello?
Right.
That's all we can hope for. I got a caller on the line, so we're going to shift gears here, and we're going to take a couple calls. Anybody wanting to call in, the number is 718-717-8296. Please keep your mic on mute before we come to you. If we come to you, it'll be by your area code. That being said, we've got a caller on the line from area code 515. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. What do you want to talk about?
Hi. I wanted to talk about some of the comments that were made. I completely agree with, but I think the bigger issues that we should be looking at for anybody to become president or be any kind of power in this country is the ones that are here. There's plenty of Muslims that were born in this country. There's plenty of Muslims that are Black Americans. There's plenty of people who come, other refugees who come from all over instead of just Iraq or Syria. They're coming from all over the world who don't come here to commit any crimes at all, but they still have the color of a black skin. As far as I'm concerned, I really feel like the problem with America is that we're so busy looking on the outward for an enemy. We're not looking at what's going on right here at home with plenty of black people dying in the street. All these things are not coincidental. They're not coincidental. Suddenly, there's black people dying in the street by police officers. At the same time, when Obama put in for military assistance on the streets in Chicago, when they have military-grade weapons and money coming in all of a sudden, what police do with military-grade weapons? Why are some of the police officers from military backgrounds? They're coming from backgrounds. They're taught to kill, but you ask these people to now police civilians and don't expect these people to kill. It doesn't make sense to me. On top of all of that, the only thing that protects me as a black woman in this country is the fact that I am Muslim. You want to know why? Because when I wear my hijab and I go out my home, they don't think I'm a black American. They think I'm from another country. So they don't bother me. They don't talk to me because they may not even think I can speak English. But the truth is, I was born and raised in this country. All of my family is born and raised in this country. This country has done nothing for black people. It has done nothing for the people who live here in this country. But all these other foreigners that come in, they can get free taxes for so many years. They can get loans. They can get cars. As long as they come and work the hours that they won't give other people who are looking for work. So if you send your workforce, the Mexicans, back, which they're a big part of the workforce, which they're a big part of the reason why no one's really getting kicked out the country, they come here illegally, they can work for cheap, they can work 20 hours because they have to, and they can also get government assistance all at the same time. Okay, you send them back, right? And then you decide to send back all the refugees who you think are Muslim from their countries too. But what about the people who were born here, who were taken from their country, who were brought here as slaves, okay, who never got any fair hand? The little handout they give, they expect us to be thankful for it, when a lot of us just want to work for ourselves and build up our own money and esteem and feel good in our communities. When our communities are ran down, our schools don't have money. These things are happening right here in this country, but we're always looking at the broader scope of the international world. But America should be concerned with America. We vote, too. So you have all these prisons full of men and women because it's a cash cow. they're making money off of prisoners. You can go to jail for something as little as a speeding ticket these days. Not to mention, if you do get pulled over, you might not make it out of that. You may end up dead. So I'm confused always why everybody's looking at the outside when there's so much stuff happening here. If this continues, it's going to be a civil war in this country. So should blacks fight against whites? Is it all white people who are racist? No, I don't think so. But because all they see is a white person over them telling them to kneel down, they got to equate everybody to be the same. And there's going to be innocent people to get hurt every time. And because all they see is black people are bad and they're uneducated and they just want to kill everything and they don't have any sense, they're going to equate every single black person the same. And it's going to be a problem. This thing is starting to heat up. I don't know if nobody's noticing. It's heating up. And you have all this coming in, the government bringing in weapons. Why are you bringing military weapons into a neighborhood of families? I don't understand that at all.
Great points.
Problem,
reaction, solution, right?
It's going to be, I'm going to have to try to address some of this stuff. So, you know, first of all, I mean, you bring up points about the refugee crisis and, you know, the immigration crisis and stuff. And, you know, we've talked about it here on the show so many times. And, you know, the thing is that most refugees, I mean, the big issue here is that they don't choose to be refugees. I mean, who in their right mind would like say, you know what, I feel like being a refugee today? I mean, that's just not going to happen, right? So, you know, the big issue, and that's something that we really try to talk about a lot here on the show, is that our foreign policy around the world is really creating this refugee crisis, or at least really a leading driver of it, especially the people coming out of Syria, Iraq, and now out of North Africa, Libya, Somalia, and places like that, you know, because of all the things we've done. We toppled the government of Libya. We've fueled the civil war in Syria. We overthrew the government of Iraq, and it's exacerbated that problem. And, you know, it really is convenient for a demagogue like Donald Trump to come in and say, you know what, it's their fault. You know, these refugees are causing the problem. But what these guys failed to talk about, and this is where Hillary Clinton is really culpable, is the what's creating these refugees to begin with. And it's, you know, politicians like Hillary Clinton, George Bush, Obama. I mean, they're all kind of on the hook for this. And, you know, the American people have done, you know, they've opposed the wars here and there, but recently they've been kind of quiet on it. But, you know, we're creating these refugee crises. And it creates a very convenient scapegoat for the government to pin all of our societal issues on refugees when, as you were saying, a lot of the issues that we're facing in this country are internal. I mean, we're dealing with internal issues, inequality, racism, police brutality, stagnant economy, you know, rampant inflation, high home prices, high rent. You know, the cost of just commodities, groceries and gas are just exponential compared to our income growth. And so, you know, we're dealing with all these issues that have really given a bunch of people reason to be insecure and worried. Those issues aren't really being talked about. I mean, the Federal Reserve has not really been talked about at all in this presidential race, which is probably the leading factor for our economic woes. And then, you know, what these guys do, and you bring up a good point on this, the divide and conquer, I think, is really strong right now. And it's really easy. What they're doing is creating a not only a left-right divide, you know, Republican versus Democrat, but now they're trying to create this white versus black narrative, and they're trying to create all these different divides, you know, people who blame Mexicans, people who don't blame Mexicans, people who blame refugees, people who don't blame refugees, people that think Colin Kaepernick is doing the right thing, people that think Colin Kaepernick is doing the wrong thing. I mean, so like there's this divide and conquer thing to where they want to pit everybody against each other, whether politically, through race, through class, through various means. They want to pit us all against each other, so we're fighting each other and at each other's throats instead of turning all together and saying, you know what, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, a socialist, or a libertarian, if you're white, if you're black, if you're Asian or Hispanic, we all can look join together and say, you know what, we're tired of this oligarchy taking advantage of us, and we all going to come together and say, you know what, we're ready to take you guys down. How are we going to do that when they've got us all fighting each other and at each other's throats? I mean, I think that's exactly what they're trying to do, and the refugee crisis and all that plays right into it. And, you know, all these societal pressures going on right now, it's really fracturing the people. I mean, I'm about to be 30, but throughout my life, I've never witnessed the country so divided and so just polarized and so just really ready to snap on each other. Right now is the worst I've ever seen it. I mean, you know, and that's, to me, what's going on. Caller from 515, I mean, do you agree? Do you think that, like, the country is now so polarized and just so fractured that we're almost, you know, we're so neutralized among ourselves that it's almost making us helpless to do anything against the real issues that are, you know, putting us under?
I think that it's been going on so long that some people are just starting to see it. It's becoming open because you have social media, cameras. You have somebody pointing a camera at you everywhere you go. But for me, I'm 36, not that much older than you. I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. That place has always been segregated, segregated to this day. I hadn't been around a white person until I became a teenager. How do you miss that? You understand? It's already been this way. But see, it just depends on who's able to see it, who's able to view it. And it depends on your perspective, where you're growing up, and where do you see these things happening. The other problem is some of the best people I know in this world are all from different other countries. They're Muslims, they're Christians, they're some of the best people in this world. They work hard for this country. They pay taxes into this country. They pay Social Security because they want to live. I don't believe for one minute that their life is not as precious as mine. Their life is even more precious than mine because they left their home to come here to struggle for an existence just so they can have something, you know? So for me, this country has went around this world dominating, corrupting, taking over, greed. It's all greed. And then you create this situation where people have nowhere to go. The people in your own country don't trust their government. How can this cannot maintain itself? You build up this big of a ball of fire, it's going to burn. There's no way. There's no way. So for me, I've seen this all my life. The only other kind of nationality I've ever seen in my neighborhood growing up were Mexicans and people from the Middle East. And those people don't seem weird to me because I grew up with those people. You understand? But when I step out of my home and on my bus is a black person and my schools are black people, everywhere I go is black people, but I have to go way downtown or on the north side of town just to even see a white person. And when those white people see me, they're even scared of me. It's, so you understand the thought process, that's, even Chicago, the way they're killing there. They created, Chicago created that. They created that, tearing down those projects. They created that, taking those criminals, putting them in everybody's neighborhood. They created the issue that's happening there. There's so many guns on the street in Chicago, it's ridiculous. How did those guns get there? But nobody talks about how they got there. They only talk about, well, what's the solution to fix it? And I don't know if anybody know that Obama had signed in... I was thinking of what it was called. I can't think of the name because it's slipping my mind. But he had called in where, you know, you have to, the military police the streets and you can only come out, martial law. We hadn't had martial law in our country. Why would you sign this thing in? Because they knew something was coming that we didn't see coming. Why were they building up all these forces and why all of a sudden in Chicago and all over the world, black people are just being shot? They building this stuff up. They build this stuff up to not only distract, but to tear down this own, this country, to force this world to have to pull some type of resource to try to so-called come together, but it's not going to happen.
Thank you for your call. That's the end of the show. Really, really interesting perspective. Thank you all for listening. Let it blow, blow through the stereo.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.